straight out of Austin, Texas. It's On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com, with your hosts, Statesman sports columnists Cedric Golden and Kirk Bowles. Often imitated, never duplicated. Hear it here first, On Second Thought.
On Second Thought, episode 314, brought to you by Hook'em.com, our good friends at Bud Light. I'm Cedric Golden, joined by the Duck, Kirk Bowles. And Duck, there's such a long line of great ESPN personalities that we brought on in the past. Joe Tessitore, you name it, Dick Vitale, Mr. Herb Street. There's so many. The lovely Holly Rowe. Tom Luganville joins us today. He's going to be on the call for Texas BYU on Saturday, 2:30 p.m. at DKR, and we're so pleased to have him join us. Tom, how are you today?
I'm great, man. It's good to be with you guys. Looking forward to this one this weekend.
Yeah, so it's going to be fun. Tom, you're kind of the original transfer portal guy, right? great junior college quarterback, went to Georgia Tech in Eastern Kentucky.
Yeah, only I had to do it when there were rules.
and no money.
You know, it's interesting. I've had it's funny you bring that up because, you know, obviously with my role in recruiting and obviously deep into the transfer portal with a lot of the stuff that I have to do with college football and recruiting. And I look back, you know, I was one of those guys that was – I was an academic qualifier. I was a son of a coach, college coach at the time. Right. And I was just – I was a real late bloomer, right? Nobody really recruited me. I played receiver, running back, quarterback, the whole nine yards. And I kind of just wanted to prove that I could play quarterback. Right. And so I decided to go to the junior college ranks. 2 years later, I'm like the highest recruited guy coming out of the junior college ranks. In fact, funny little note here for y'all, me and Sark played against each other. I was at Palomar College. He was at El Camino.
Yes.
And it's funny because I was a sophomore. He was a freshman. We were the number one ranked team in the country. I think they were number three. And we played at their place. And I'm going to tell you, our team was really good. We didn't have any close games. And we play them, and we're down with like 45 seconds to go in the game. They've done everything they can to win the game. We got the ball on offense. And their coach, for some reason, goes cover zero against us in no backs, five wide. We run five verticals, and I literally lofted one up over the top to our slot receiver, who runs and crosses the goal line as the clock goes to zero.
Yikes.
We win. They lose. We go on to win the national championship that year. He plays one more year, obviously transfers on to BYU. Then – when I was coaching in the XFL back in 2001, the original XFL, I was a quarterbacks coach at Los Angeles, and we had an open workout where we brought in some NFL guys, some CFL guys, and our workout was Tommy Maddox.
Touchdown, Tommy.
Scott Milanovich, and Sark. And we brought in all three of those guys. They all worked out for us. We ended up signing Scott and Tommy. Tommy ended up being the MVP of the league. Sark goes up to the CFL, plays another year, maybe year and a half, and ends up getting into coaching and joining USC as a grad assistant. So, yeah, long winding road there. But anyway, the transfer portal. So I go on. I moved to Georgia Tech. And when I transferred to Georgia Tech, they had a returning starter. And I knew that when I transferred there. So I go in there, and I end up beating them out. I'm the starting quarterback there my junior year. Then bad season, coaching change. They start coming in with more option-oriented principles. This was right before Joe Hamilton joined the program. So you kind of knew what they do.
George
O'Leary becomes the interim coach, then becomes the permanent head coach. And, you know, I was a passer. I wasn't an option guy. So I had an opportunity to transfer. And in those days, to your point, I had a redshirt year, so I could transfer Power 5 to Power 5, but I'd have to sit out. Or I could just transfer down. Right. And play right away. And so what I did at the time is I kind of looked for the most storied 1AA programs. And at that time, the legendary Roy Kidd was at Eastern Kentucky. And RIP, he just passed away this past August at 91 years old, but had a great finish to my college career. Was a 4-year starter at three different levels. Wouldn't have planned it that way, but couldn't be good. Got to be honest with you, I wouldn't have wanted it to turn out any other way. It was kind of a unique situation. So yeah, I'm more than familiar with the transfer cycle.
And you're familiar with Sark, which I'm sure you reminded from time to time of that last second play.
Oh, we talk about it every time I see him because his parents are still in Torrance, Southern California. My parents are in Arizona. At the time, my dad was the head coach at San Diego State. He's recruiting me 1 year, Sark the other year. And so we just always have a lot to talk about, yeah.
Imagine the money that you could have made in this era as the number one quarterback recruit.
Oh, coming out of the junior college ranks?
Yeah, we were – Kirk and I were walking out of the Longhorn facility Monday after the presser, and we get on the elevator, and their star cornerback, Jahdae Barron, walks in, and he's just really cool.
Yeah, he's a great kid.
He's a great kid, and he's personable, and he bumps fists with us. He's like, how you living? And we're like, yeah, we just talked to you, and, you know – And so we get off the elevator and we walk out of there. And he gets into a brand new Tesla and drives off. What happened to college football players who were broke? They don't exist anymore.
No more ramen noodles, right?
I will say this. The whole broke perspective is a little bit fabricated. I mean, as a former scholarship player. I can tell you, none of us were starving. Now, depending on what your background may have been and what you may have come from, that can be different for every individual. But we were plenty outfitted. We were plenty fed. We had access to supplements and snacks and tutoring and all. You know, I always hear this, oh, these guys got nothing. Trust me, what they're getting in their scholarship is plenty. And now you add this on top of it, and everybody's getting a piece of the pie.
There's not a lot of movie money out there. I mean, a lot of guys say, well, you know, wanted to go out on dates, and we didn't always have money for that. But
right,
the special guys always probably found a way to get some.
Let's talk some ball. And, Tom, you told us you were at the Baylor game, and you've seen Texas half dozen times or more the last season and a half. How do you size him up going into this BYU game, and what did you make of the Houston escape?
Well, you know, clearly the storyline is the Quinn Ewers injury, and, you know, how do you make that transition to Malik Murphy? How much does the game plan change? How much is in the game plan for a guy that hasn't played a lot of football versus a guy that you can, you know, throw the offense at him and he can probably know it on the back of his hand. So Sark will make some adjustments. I think the one thing that he does a really good job of is it's not about his system and the quarterback having to play his system. The system is multiple and it's maneuverable. And what I mean by that is he's going to look at Malik Murphy and he's going to say, okay, there's things that Quinn Ewers does really well. Then you know what? Malik's not there yet. So we're going to take that stuff. We're going to take that. We're going to throw that out. Why would I ask a guy to do something he's not comfortable doing? And so I think they'll find the right mix. I think early on there's some what I call routine staples of an offense that are easy concepts that are meant to get the ball out of your hand quickly and also meant to generate confidence, particularly on early downs. Forget all of the other stuff where you want to scheme guys up and you're going to motion and shift. You can do all this and that. Let's start off with the basics so he gets confident and he's comfortable. Right. And then you build from there. And so you work through the week of practice and, you know, you're scratching things off. And then you say, oh, I want to add that. And you have your conversations with Malik and Arch. And you're saying, okay, you know, how do you feel about this? What do you like on third down here? What do you like on first down if we're backed up? And you come to an agreement as a staff and player that, hey, I'm comfortable, you're comfortable, so this is what we go into the game plan with. You tell me if you don't like it, but you got to tell me now so that we know.
And he listens,
and I think that's the big storyline in this game. Listen, BYU has somehow managed to be 5-2. I'm not quite sure how.
I'm not either.
But they are 5-2.
Right.
Now, the schedule is backloaded for them. You know, they've been a different team at night than they have been during the day. For whatever reason, BYU plays an entirely different type of game. You know, they were the beneficiary of 5 turnovers and a third-string quarterback at Texas Tech a week ago in Provo. The schedule on the front end, you know, they've had a reeling Arkansas. But on the back end, they're going to start taking the field against some teams that are more talented than they are, more experienced than they are. You know, the one thing about BYU coming into the conference that I think it is different than Cincinnati or UCF or Houston is that because of their independence over the last several years, their schedule was always littered with Power Five teams.
Very
and
tough.
Good Power Five teams. Tennessee, oh, yeah. SC, Arkansas. Like, so this jump for them, I think they've kind of known what to expect. It's not too big. Mm-hmm. They, you know, they're a bit older. They've got guys coming back from missions. They've got a larger roster. I mean, they have some things that benefit them in that regard. But aside from the quarterback position for Texas, I think the one thing that stands out to most, the most to me in this matchup is BYU has been horrendous on third down offensively. They cannot convert a third down. I don't know why it is. I don't know what's created all the issues, but they are at or near the bottom. I think they're 124th this week. Last That's week, amazing. They were 130th.
Wow.
Right, going into the Texas Tech game. Yeah, is that what they want? Okay, so now
yeah, you're right.
Texas coincidentally is like tops in that regard. Like Texas gets off the field on third down defensively. Yeah. So that tells me that BYU better have success on first and second down so they can get third and manageable. If they don't, then it could be a long day. And that happened to them 2 weeks ago on the road against TCU, which, by the way, was a day game. And they did not play well. I have it's just a weird thing for the Cougs. But listen, you know, I think with Texas as a whole, this is a roster from Sark's arrival. This is a roster that has been built for another conference. You know, Sark coming over from Alabama, having been in those stadiums, faced those teams, he knows full well that if you are going to compete in the SEC, you better have a line of scrimmage built football team on both sides of the ball. And to be honest with you, that's true for any sport. You look at any sport, baseball, basketball, football, championship teams are built from the inside out.
Mm-hmm.
And so where I've seen the greatest improvement is in the offensive line and the defensive front seven, to the point where you look at them and you say, not only are they playing like that, they look like that. Like they have the body types. I was sharing, you guys may or may not know this. A couple years ago, I was kind of examining some recruiting stuff and I was looking, I'm trying to figure out why were the offensive line and the guys they took not panning out.
Mm-hmm.
And I started to really kind of dig into it. Did you guys know that Texas hasn't had a first round offensive lineman since 2002?
Yep.
Like,
was it Johnson?
How is that even? Yeah, how is that even possible? Right?
It's
amazing. And now this group might have two or three potentially. And so they've really regrouped in that area. And then, like I said, they've built from the inside out. So you get a skill piece here. You go out and you know, you compliment an Xavier Worthy with a Jontae Cook or DeAndre Moore, those next men up. You bring in Nair for Wyoming. Obviously, Jatavion Sanders has been a complete mismatch for people. So the pieces of the puzzle seem to be falling into place, because I think the long-term vision from Sark and his staff was, we got to finish things out. Let's try and win the Big 12. But when we step foot in that conference, we cannot be behind in the areas that matter. And I think they've done a nice job of that.
And he said it after the first year, we've got to get some more massive human beings.
Yeah.
He knew what the problem was and he addressed it. Now you're a quarterback and you're for a former coach. What are you saying to Malik Murphy during this week of practice? This is the biggest week of his life.
I think what I'm saying is you don't have to wear an S on your chest, right? You don't have to do it all. You don't have to come out and force plays. Let the game come to you. And the most important coaching point in all of football when it comes to quarterbacks is take what the defense gives you. If the 5-yard hitch is there, throw it. All right. If we've got a design here and we're going to run double slants and that flat defender buzzes the outside slant, hit that front slant. Believe what you see. Trust in what you see. I think the other thing, too, that when you haven't played a lot, particularly at the college level, is if he's under duress, all right, and he's having to throw with people in his face, it's okay to throw it away and live the play the next down. Don't force it. And even sometimes you're better off taking a sack, it may not be ideal, but it's a better alternative than throwing it over the middle. It gets tipped and intercepted because you're off platform and you just make a poor decision. So I think a lot of it is just playing from within yourself and don't try to do too much. And, you know, it's easier said than done, because with Malik Murphy, first of all, you got to look at him, I think, from two different angles. Number one, he's extremely physically gifted. I mean, you see the size, he's imposing, he's got a strong arm. The ball comes out with power. It carries and finishes. He's got a much stronger arm than Quinn Ewers does. In terms of power and velocity.
And that's saying something.
Yeah, that is. It's saying something. And so you know he can make all of the throws into all the nooks and crannies. All right. So that part impresses you. My concern when he was coming out of high school was, for a guy that physically gifted, he never completed during the course of his career more than 59% of his passes. And that's a pretty low number. His junior year, he completed 53.9, I think, percent of his passes. And sometimes that, when you're looking at that and you're saying, boy, this guy is really, really talented, and he's clearly one of the most talented people on the field of both teams, that completion rate should be a lot higher. So then you start to examine, all right, is he a guy that's maybe not innately accurate? Is he a guy that can be erratic with the football? And so that's going to be something on Saturday I'm going to be paying close attention to, is ball placement, timing, rhythm. Does he give his guy a chance? Does he put it where it needs to be, where his guy can get it and others don't? Or does he have an open guy on a curl route and he airmails it? Or does he have an open guy running down the sideline and he overthrows it or throws it out of bounds? You know, those are things I think, you know, completion percentage in today's game. What, you know, in the old days, if you were complete, when I say old days, I'm saying just 20 years ago, you were completing 65% of your passes, boy, you are really hitting the mark. Nowadays with the bubble screens and the under screens and the slip screens and all the dink and dunk and the spread and the RPO, you know, that number's into the high 60s, low 70s, mid 70s sometimes. Right. Crazy. And so he's going to have to, I think, show that Sark can trust his overall accuracy playing and play out.
And that's a great question, guys. It's like, you know, Mike Leach famously said, you can't teach passers to be accurate. I totally agree with him. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's held him back a little bit. And Sark has raved about Arch Manning, you know. You know, if he walks in there for a snap on Saturday afternoon, that place is going to go nuts. So,
no doubt.
And I don't know how much you saw Arch play in high school, lower level, obviously. But does he have that accuracy gene more than Malik?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think so. I think I use the term innately accurate, meaning that it just comes natural. It just is what he is. When the ball needs to be here, it's here. When the ball needs to be here, it's here. When it needs to be here, it's here. And not putting the ball in harm's way routinely. And, you know, speaking on that with Arch, and I think it's interesting, and I don't know how much he'll reveal. He's usually very upfront with us. But without all of us on the outside truly knowing what the timeline is for Quinn Ewers,
right,
you've got to consider the way this season is going to play out going forward. So you've got this game this week. Then you have four remaining games. Well, you can play four and still redshirt.
That's right.
So my inclination would be that you try to get through BYU, and can Malik Murphy get you through that game and not have to play Arch Manning, with the knowledge of whatever it is you think you're going to have Quinn Ewers back. So I think it's kind of a three-pronged thought process of, all right, he may be out this long. This is the earliest we could get him back. How will Malik play? If he plays well enough, great. We keep riding him. If not, but we can get through the BYU game, then do we start to consider, okay, maybe we give 16 a chance. And now you know you are safe playing him the rest of the way and not burning his red shirt.
I wonder if you might play both of them a little bit. Give BYU different looks. And Arch is a good runner. You know, we've seen
He's a good athlete. Yeah.
And you, like you said, Malik's just got a gun, and Sark loves to stretch the field for a whole bunch of reasons, you know, back everybody up, show the threat, so on. So I just wonder if he might really play them both a little bit, see if one catches fire, see if one's more comfortable.
Well, like I said, you doing that, you know you're burning one game right there.
Right.
So now,
right.
And now the remainder of the season, again, a lot of this depends on information that none of us may know in terms of when Quinn could come back.
Oh, yeah.
You know, a sprained grade two on your throwing shoulder now, that could be problematic. You know, it's not the opposite.
You think
shoulder.
That's like a 3 week thing, 4 week thing? Is it a pain tolerance thing, Tom?
I think, and I've had one on the left side. I haven't had one on the throwing shoulder, but I think it's a likely a couple week thing when it comes to ensuring you don't create further damage, and then it becomes a pain tolerance thing.
Right.
And then, and again, you know, this is what happens at this time of year, right? It's not just Texas. It's everybody. It's who can stay healthy, who avoids the big injury. When does your bye week come? Do you have the depth to weather the storm as this thing, everybody starts getting tired and you're racing? I mean, because Texas right now really controls their path to a college football playoff.
Yes, sir.
Every single week, they don't rely on anybody but themselves if they want to be able to do it. So you got to have the horses in the stable. Obviously, it's not ideal to lose your starting quarterback. So you're going to have to come up with some answers there. The good news is I think Texas is so good on defense that they go into every game with the ability to keep the score down and manageable if things aren't going great on offense.
That's true. And this is so fascinating to me, Tom, because so many layers. What if Quinn's out for longer? What if Quinn's draft stock goes way down and Quinn goes, man, I'm a first-round pick, but I just got to light it up next year. And then you go, I'm coming back. And then Arch is like, wow, did I come
in
here
the
to
league.
See
And
Malik's gone, obviously.
Yeah.
But Arch is like, I didn't come here to sit for 2 years.
Yeah, you don't know.
Senior quarterback. And so I think, and I'm not speaking for him, but this is my opinion. I think Sark's like, Quinn, get back in here, man. Don't get back in here, light him up in the last month of the season and go play for the Atlanta Falcons or whatever. Go rejoin Bijan. But
you know what? But you know what, Sid? You're right about that. And obviously, he wants Quinn back for a whole bunch of reasons. But this goes beyond all, well, how many games do you play Arch? Who's a little bit more ready?
Sure.
You're in the national championship chase until you're not. And like Tom just said, you still got your whole year in front of you, and you're a contender. So,
yeah.
In all fairness to the quarterbacks, and especially Arch, it's like, you know, you got to keep this train on the tracks, and you got a real
this, Doug, do you think assurances were made to the Mannings that Arch would redshirt this year, or do you just think they're trust Sark to do the right thing?
I don't think they make arrangements. You know, there's always the talk that Chris Sims was promised the job over Major Applewhite, you know, but you don't get the Gatorade number one national player of the year, you know, to sit the bench. So, you know, to your point, you're exactly right. But to me, you just got to win games, and Arch and the Manning family would understand that. There's so much on the line. So,
but think about this,
Arch wouldn't. He never won anything, but that's okay.
Yeah, but think about this too. From if you're looking at it from the long view, and I have the feeling that the Mannings do that. Like they're not just looking at something through a very narrow prism. They're saying, okay, well, let's just say Quinn comes back. All right, that means that Arch Manning would have 2 years of like development, growth, maturity, learning, not having the pressure of the weight of the world on his shoulders as a young player. And then all of a sudden, if he wanted to, he could have 3 years as a starter at Texas.
You could.
So if Quinn comes back, like, I don't think that hurts Arch Manning. Now, Malik Murphy, I think, would have to find another home.
He'd have to go.
And that's fine. That's fine. Yeah. But I think the Mannings as a family and the support structure have a lot of faith in Sark's player development of the quarterback position. There's a lot of proof in that pudding, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it goes back to Matt Leinart and a lot of these guys and Mark Sanchez and then Jake Locker up at Washington and, you know, obviously the quarterbacks at Alabama. So we are in this world of instant gratification. I want it now, now, now. I want it yesterday. I want to play right away. I want to start right now. That doesn't always mean it's the right thing for you or the best thing for you. I like the approach that the Mannings have taken in this. And I, to be honest with you, I think that Sark realizes that, okay, we don't have to play this guy right this second. And we're not being pressured by the family to do it either.
Right. I think he would only play him if he thinks that gives him the best chance to win. You know, it wouldn't be for the pressure. And you touched on the defense, Tom. Texas has feasted on backup quarterbacks all year. Now they played two back-to-back, Dylan Gabriel and Donovan Smith, veteran quarterbacks, and, you know, Gabriel at UCF and Smith at Tech. And even before that, you know, Milroy was technically a starting quarterback. But those three quarterbacks alone threw for 991 yards and six touchdowns. These backup quarterbacks averaged 181 yards. Are you seeing cracks in that defense, and especially in the secondary?
With the injuries,
Well, they've been banged up a little bit. But I think at times, if you were to look at the defense, you would say, okay, well, where are they maybe vulnerable? I think it's on the outside on the perimeter more so than it is down the middle of the defense. I'd prefer it to be there. Where you don't want to be vulnerable is down the middle.
No, you don't.
Because those guys sometimes on the outside are a long, long way away from where the snap starts. And so, but they're coming. I remember going into the Baylor game, and, you know, you had Watts and Malik, and I think Barron actually slipped over there too a little bit, and they were kind of all rotating at one corner spot. They were all actually playing pretty good.
Right.
So they just kept letting them play, right? It wasn't like they were in this position to say, well, we got it. We got to line up with this guy and only play this guy. But you know what I think, guys? I really believe this. We are in an era right now in college football, more so than ever before, where it is really hard to coach and play defensive football, right? I mean, think about this. Everybody's complaining and bitching about tackling and all this and that. Well, look what we're asking these kids to do. We're in an era of player safety.
Yeah.
We are an era of no contact. We're in an era of trying to preserve the players during the week. So we're going to go out there and we're going to roll foam donuts around the field and have players tackle those.
Right.
As opposed to doing old school 9-on-7 and 11-on-11 and lining up and blooding each other's noses and putting in people in space and tackling. So then we're going to go put them out there on a Saturday and expect them all of a sudden tackle. It doesn't work that way. And with these offenses now, they're spreading everybody so thin horizontally and so thin vertically that if they get you matched up on space, even if you're good on defense, you're going to miss.
Right.
It's just the teams with the really good fronts, like a Texas, an Alabama, a Georgia, an Ohio State, a Penn State, maybe a Clemson, they're going to get away with more because they can impact the quarterback. They can disrupt the quarterback. There's going to be more incompletions. Yeah, without blitzing, controlling it with four down. So the ball might be in the air and it's an errant throw, or maybe the ball doesn't even get into the air. And so the back end gets protected a little bit. The space gets protected. But if you're not one of those teams, it's hard to – like, I remember in the old days, if you gave up 375 yards a game on defense, they were going to fire your butt.
Exactly.
Now you can give up 550 and win the game.
Exactly.
Like, it's crazy.
I don't know how defensive coordinators sleep at night. And then you the targeting rule, you know, like
RPO, option.
I was watching last week. A kid got popped for targeting. It was a Power 5 game. I can't remember which one. There was 15 seconds left in the game, and he got popped for targeting, and now he's got to sit out. That was Utah USC.
USC,
got to sit out the first half of this game. 10 seconds left in the game. They got to do something about that.
I can't believe that. That rule bothers me so much. Listen, I think there needs to be levels of targeting, like a level one, level two, whatever, like where one level has like a malicious intent or intent to harm. Another one is just like a bang, bang play, couldn't be avoided. Clearly there was no intent to go after somebody or spear or lead. And then if you're going to do it, give them the penalty. But let's get rid of the punitive. Oh, well, you're suspended. And if you want to suspend them for the rest of that game, fine. Don't let it leak over into the rest of the game. And come on, to the rest of the season. It's ridiculous.
I like to see it as a cumulative penalty. You get three targeting, you're out of full game, or two targeting where, okay, this looks like a trend. But I hate
that
targeting rule, too. I'm right with you. Just to look around the country real quick, Tom. I don't know if you got a surefire – college football playoff top four, but this is as wide open as I've ever seen it. And if you don't have an allegiance to a team, you got to love this college football season.
It's great, man. And I think we're in for more surprises. I really do. I think we're dealing with 18 to 22-year-old kids, right? And they're not always going to go out and have the best day. They're not always going to go out focused. They will pay attention to how a team they're about to play played the previous week against a bad team. You look at Miami and Georgia Tech, and Georgia Tech's coming off the loss to Bowling Green at home. So what does Miami do? They go out and fiddle around and they get their butt beat. And so we're seeing it every week. But I think Michigan hasn't been challenged, but everything my eyes tell
They're
me they're
good.
really good.
They're
They're
really
really good. And they're good in
good.
the areas that matter. And so I think they're probably the clear cut right now, number one. I still think Georgia, even though the loss of Brock Bowers could be big, their competitive depth and their talent top to bottom within their roster is pretty vastly superior to 99% of the other teams out there. And then, I look at a bunch of teams that you could clump in there that you say, I could see that team being number three, or I could see that team being number four. So you've got Florida State, you've got Oregon and Washington, you've got Texas, you've got Oklahoma, and
Ohio State.
Ohio State's another one. So, like, I think you could take a lot of those teams, throw them up against the wall, and see who sticks. And you could probably pick a handful of them and say, they'd survive just as well as they would survive. The Ohio State team, while it hasn't been pretty, kind of like Alabama, it hasn't necessarily been pretty. Like, Ohio State's at least had two elite level wins to top 10 matchups. They
Definitely.
have done that.
They
Others have
have.
not done that. Texas and Alabama play. Texas beats Alabama, and now all of a sudden Alabama's starting to like come along. And like, you look at Alabama and you're like, all right, they're going to screw around and find a way to get into this college football
They
playoff
are.
mix.
And
I don't
Texas
know how
beat
they're going to do
them.
it, but they're going to do it. And so, and that's what
You
makes it
got
so
all
much
needs
fun.
them to win. Texas needs that.
Yeah, big time. Yeah, no doubt.
And like you said, this is such a great year. This is part of the year. I wish we had the 12-team, college football playoff, because we'd have some terrific games, I think, if we had
Oh,
an
yeah.
expanded field
I mean,
this
think
year.
about Utah, Oregon State. Like, Oregon State is a problem. Like,
Washington.
there would be some great matchups in that 6 to 12 seeding,
Oh my God, Arizona's getting better. I watched
I
Arizona
know it.
play USC off their feet and should have won that game. So I don't know. Real quick, Michigan sign stealing. It sure looks like it happened. And what kind of punishment would be appropriate for Michigan if it's proven?
So if what's alleged comes to fruition, all right? Because what's alleged is pretty diabolical. Because listen, in-game sign stealing, part of the deal. It's part of the game. It's one of the reasons why you've seen over the last 4 to 5 years these sidelines are starting to change, right? You're seeing tarps over the back benches. You're seeing people holding up these big, huge, tall drapes over their signals and this and that. And if you also noticed, people have gotten away from the big signs with, like, a Captain America shield or Daffy Duck or this and that. That stuff started to go away, right? So
That's
everybody's
important.
very protective in game. The problem I have with what's being alleged here is if you're going to go out on the road in person with audio and video devices to be able, in an advanced setting, what I mean advanced, you're playing this weekend and the team you're watching, you're not playing for 3 weeks. And you go and you gather all of that stuff and you now have the ability to match up that signal with the play that was run and prepare all of that stuff with your coaches. Now, hear me out. Football is still about blocking and tackling, protecting the ball, scoring, preventing the other team from scoring. So while you can put a team in a position, if it knows what play is coming, you still have to stop it. Let's acknowledge that. But I'll tell you what, if you knew on every snap, when you saw that signal, exactly what the play was, and you had the ability to position yourself of knowing it's coming, that's a whole different set of
That's
circumstances. And I
jazz.
think that's where this thing is not good. It's not good, and it's not good for college football. And if you're asking me what I think, if what's alleged comes to fruition and there's proven evidence, I think the severity of it should include a ban from a college football playoff.
This year?
No, I don't think they'll get to that because the NCAA doesn't move that fast.
I
But
agree.
I'm saying going,
They move? When did they
yeah,
start
I know.
moving?
So go, but going forward, I think this is something from an integrity of the game standpoint that you cannot tolerate. You would have to levy such a severe penalty that it would send a ripple effect and a message across college football. Don't even dare to do it. Don't even dare to try. And right now, guys, you guys know as well as I do, the NCAA wants their pound of flesh from Jim Harbaugh.
And Harbaugh would be very smart to follow the Pete Carroll playbook. Get out one step ahead of the pot. And go coach the Colts or the Bears or somebody like that.
No, I agree with you. I'd say a 1-year ban on postseason and a 1-year suspension for a Harbaugh, like, or who would probably be in the NFL, we'll like
gone.
Said.
We'll be gone. Yeah.
He'll be gone.
Yeah.
Man, this has been fun, Tom.
Pleasure, man. Great.
This has been so man. Good. I can't believe we haven't had y'all before, and you're going to be our regular now. So,
all right. Well, good. I'm glad to hear it. I appreciate you all having me. It's been a good time.
It's been so much
fun. Appreciate you. Look forward to you on the call, 2:30 p.m. on Saturday, BYU at Texas. Tom Luganville is one of the best out there, and we can't wait to see you. We'll look for you in the press box, sir. Good chicken tacos in the press box, so come get some.
Oh, DKR's got some good food in the press box, I'm aware, yes. All right, guys, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you, Tom. Have a good day.
All right, see ya. All right, bye-bye.
On Second Thought.
Doug, what a conversation with Tom Luganville. Just a wealth of information. And why did it take us so long to get him on the show, Doug?
I tell you, he's going to be a regular now. He talked on so many different topics. And here's a guy that was a star quarterback, the National Junior College Player of the Year. So he knows what he's talking about. And obviously, he knows about recruiting, too. So great guest.
What are we going to – I mean, we were dead wrong about the Houston game. Not dead wrong in that Texas lost. We were right when they were up 21-0 because we knew they were going to cover that spread. But then all of a sudden they're in a dogfight and they get out of there with a win. 17.5-point favorite at the taping of this podcast over BYU. Is that number a little high? Vegas is usually right on about these kind of things.
Well, it seems a little high, but I think – also, one of the reasons you and I picked Texas in a blowout last week was even Tom on Thursday told us, yeah, I got a team that's a little pissed off, you know. Yeah, but that pissed off feeling went from the team to the Texas own fans because they went, what the hell happened? They were only pissed off for a quarter? I mean, they scored on that first drive in the second quarter and then 10 points.
The rest of the game?
They lost their intensity, and that's why – it is hard to flip a switch, you know, once that game is starting. And so I kind of have a problem with adjustments by, you know, Sark and Pete Kwiatkowski, the defensive coordinators, especially in the second half.
Yeah, and you know, Kalani Sitake has had some problems on defense over the last couple of seasons, new defensive coordinator.
He's
come in with some wrinkles, and you know they're going to try to confuse the young quarterback. But I just think that Texas has enough – in its barn, in its bag, to go in there, support this young quarterback, and get out of there, I think, with a sizable spread at the end. I just don't know if it's going to be 17. It just, to me, Duck, it feels like a 31-14 type game.
Yeah, or even closer, because we don't know what we're going to get with Malik, and the defense is reeling a little bit with some injuries because they've given up some big numbers. What is it, like 55 points in the last two games? And that's not a dominant defense, you know. It really isn't. So it definitely seems high to me. And like I said, BYU is 5-2, you know, and they punked Texas Tech, you know, last week. But as Tom reminded us, I mean, they got five turnovers. They were playing a number three. So, you know, they went in Arkansas and won. So they're not a great third down offense. Their running game has been atrocious. They only average 79 yards a game. So you figure Texas should take advantage of that. But they've been vulnerable to the passing game. So we'll see.
If Malik can hit on some long ones. Before we get out of here, we decided we're gonna dazzle you with a new segment that we're going to do every week. And it's called I Don't Even Know You Anymore. And I'm just – and the reason we're doing it is I am so tired of arguing with Kirk Bowles when the cameras aren't running. Some of the best arguments are when we're just at lunch or hanging out. And so We decided we're not going to argue off camera anymore. We're going to share our arguments with you. So our first segment is all about the quarterbacks. Kirk, what's your take on Arch Manning? And I know you're wrong, but get it out of the way so I could destroy you in these last 5 minutes.
When have I ever been wrong? Come on, dude. I mean, you know, I put in my nine things this week that, you know, maybe you should consider playing both of them, especially if Malik struggles in the early going, because, you know, to me, this isn't about whether Arch Manning should redshirt or not, because they got five games left, and you and I both know he can play four, and it's not kind of one of his 4 years of eligibility, but it's just they got too much on their plate to worry about stuff like that.
And play him. No, if Malik's playing well, you don't play him against BYU. Oh,
no. If he comes out.
BYU.
Oh, no. As usual, you're misunderstanding. You know, you have comprehension.
Explain it.
But, well, I mean, if Malik comes in and throws five touchdowns and 390 yards, heck yeah.
He's the red shirt Quinn.
Never Quinn. I think he's beyond the. That, and here's the other thing too. It's like Tom said, is that I worry about the accuracy thing, because that's something you cannot teach. And like he said, I didn't follow his high school career that closely like Tom Luganville did, but he said he's like a 59% completion percentage guy, and that kind of, you know, my ears kind of perked up a little bit, and maybe because he didn't have great receivers, maybe because he throws it. Like a howitzer.
He was 9 of 13 for a 165. Looked very accurate in the spring game, but we know that they weren't able to touch him.
But right.
What I've seen, I think he'll be fine. Asking him to be Vince Young, and did you really just ask me when have you ever been wrong? And I brought up Vince Young. I'm just going to leave that there.
It's going to be that kind of stuff, is it?
When are they going to ask him to be BYU? They just aren't. You got Jonathan Brooks. You've got some good receivers. You got X. You got J-Dub. You got all those weapons on the outside. You can throw.
Didn't they have those weapons last week?
Yeah, but he didn't. He was coming in off of a. He didn't practice with the ones last week. You really thought he was just going to come in like Superman? Nope. Like a backup, and I mean, he worked hard to get ready, but he wasn't working with the ones.
Oh, I'm not putting it on Malik
and Xavier
I'm not putting it on Malik. I'm putting on the whole Texas offense, which didn't score for like 37 minutes. That's not a Malik issue. That's an offensive issue. So,
we're talking about Malik, sir, and I think Arch Manning is going to be fine, but I don't think that Arch Manning. If they're comfortably ahead, and Sark knows that Quinn Ewers is going to be back in a couple of weeks.
He doesn't know that. He doesn't know.
He knows more than we know, Doc. He knows the severity of it. I mean, anytime a coach says, "Oh, he's week to week," that doesn't tell us anything. We knew that before.
Well, no, he was. He at least didn't say he was day to day, because that implies like, well, maybe he can play Saturday. Week to week means he knows he's out two and maybe three, if not more. And it's like Tom said, you don't know how people are going to respond to injury. You know, how much pain can he tolerate? And like he said, he had a left shoulder joint sprain, but this is on his right. It's on his throwing arm. So you don't know. You got a chance for your first ever college football playoff. Or ever in school history. I mean, TCU became the first school from Texas to get in the CFP. So if it means burning a year for Arch Manning, if Malik was ineffective and they needed him to win a game, I say you put Arch in there. I think you try to do what's right by the player and preserve his eligibility if you can. But the Mannings are all about winning, and they know. I think he would sacrifice a year if it meant playing one game or two games.
But then the dynamic is going to change. And what if Quinn comes back and here all of a sudden, if that happens, if they burn that red shirt and Arch plays five or six games, then Quinn Ewers might become a grad transfer next year, or just go and transfer to someone else. Because I don't think he's interested in coming back here and competing with a kid for the starting quarterback position.
Well, he wouldn't be transferring. That's crazy talk. Why would he transfer?
What, let me ask you this.
Go ahead and ask me.
Professor, if Arch Manning shreds in the last five games.
Oh, if he's starting Saturday and then shreds.
If he comes in against BYU, shreds, starts next week, shreds, and then all of a sudden he's so hot, and then Quinn's like, I think I can play now. And what is Sark going to do then? Because your franchise quarterback says he's ready, but Arch is burning it up. Do you sit Quinn and go, Quinn, we just want you to be 100% healthy. Do you do that? And then all of a sudden you got your nice little quarterback controversy, and I don't know that Quinn wants to come back without the certainty that he's the guy next year. I think Quinn would leave.
Well, there's a lot of issues you just bring up. Now, does Arch Manning look great for two games, or does he look great for three or four? And then you got, man, do you upset the apple cart? Do you worry about the rhythm? The other thing, too, is, you know, if I'm Quinn's daddy, I'm saying you probably ought to go pro no matter what. You played 2 years of college ball. Guess what? You got hurt both years, you know, and how many more shoulder injuries or collarbone injuries do you have in your career? So I would almost think he's gone regardless, I would think. But we don't know.
But if your draft stock falls and you're a third or fourth round pick, why wouldn't you come back and improve it like Russell Wilson did?
What if you come back and don't prove it and you get hurt again?
Chance you take, sir.
Sure you do. I would go as a third rounder. Seemed to me, what's the name of that guy? Brock Purdy? What's he? Mr. Irrelevant. The last pick of the draft. And people are talking about him like he's Joe Montana. He's accurate also. So
he was accurate this past week. He threw it very well to both teams. Yes.
Oh, that's right. They played the best defense in football. No, that was Cleveland. They were playing Minnesota, wasn't he? And let's not go into that since he's my fantasy quarterback. But don't you? So I wouldn't put money on it, but I would think Quinn would probably be gone regardless to go pro. You disagree?
No, I don't. But I think he'll be gone. If Arch burns his red shirt, Quinn will not play for Texas next year.
Because
Arch Manning is a rock star. And Quinn, as good as he is, I don't see him as a rock star. He's not he doesn't bring that that fire from the fans that Colt brought or that Vince brought. But he's a really good college quarterback. And he's kind of the laid back demeanor probably doesn't help him. But Arch Manning hasn't spoken to us, and I don't even know that he's an extrovert, but he's a Manning. He's got that pedigree, and that works for him.
Yeah, I don't think he would transfer. I would think he'd either go pro or come back. But like you said, in the scenario you kind of painted, if Arch, you know, replaces Malik, if Malik's ineffective and then just goes on and look great for three games, four games, you know, maybe his heart does have a decision to make, I think Quinn would probably go pro anyway. But I was glad I was able to clear this up and explain it to you.
You know, y'all, you can email us and tell us what you thought. I mean, Kirk just never wins these, but that's okay. He wanted to do it. I'm up 1-0. Wonderful, wonderful discussion. Great podcast today.
Awesome.
Tom Lugan, Bill, we're going to have him on again. Hopefully, maybe during the CFP would be a good time, because I know he's going to be all over that. That's going to do it for this week's show. Special shout out to a listener, Rodney Jackson in San Diego, California, is listening to our podcast every week and reading our stuff. We're going to be international, because I know there's someone in France that listens to Duck. So we are we're spreading our wings on this podcast. We're doing.
We'd love to hear from you.
We'd love to hear from you. Any ideas, any suggestions, criticisms, we don't care. We just want to hear from you. We want to keep you listening. But we appreciate you listening and watching us this week, and we'll be back next week. Thanks to Chandler Hoffley, our producer. For Kirk Bowles, the Duck, I'm Sid Golden. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to On Second Thought, powered by Hook'em.com. Join Sid and Kirk every Thursday at lunch for a new episode. Archived episodes are available on iTunes and Google Android Play.